Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, John Karsibayev.
Hi, my name is Deb Cupp, and I'm the president of Microsoft US.
Deb, thanks so much for making time to join us on the Ivy Podcast. I'm super excited about our conversation that we had planned for our listeners here. But before we do that, can you give us a thumbnail version of your career prior to that?
Yeah, sure, John. Thanks so much for having me. I'm happy to be here as well. So yeah, currently the president of Microsoft US, and I've had, I don't know, do I have to age myself, John? A fairly long career doing many things. Worked for a company called Standard Register that's now Terrell Communications for 17 years, which is really the bulk of my career, and had the opportunity to do many, many different jobs there. Went from there to SAP, where I was for 6 years and worked on the traditional side of the business at SAP, and then went to run one of the cloud acquisitions in North America, which was SuccessFactors, which was an awesome experience to both work in a cloud business as well as an acquisition, which was pretty interesting in terms of culture and figuring out how to bring the companies together, and then to Microsoft. So I've been here 4 years now, loving every minute of it. And I started with the company in a corporate role. That was a global job looking across our enterprise businesses and working on all of our industry strategies for the company. And recently, in the last 8 months, I've moved to this role as president of MSUS. So it's gone fast, really fast. It's been a lot of fun, and I'm enjoying every minute of it.
Wow, that's super exciting and very colorful and diverse career you've had so far. Thank you for sharing that. So having spent in roles of, you know, various levels and organizations of various size as well, tell us a little bit more about how just the evolution of your leadership style through these experiences, maybe some examples or thoughts on just the authentic and empathetic leadership, because as we're listeners of your own show, Cup of Sunshine, and as you interview a lot of other accomplished executives and thought leaders, these are some of the things that you like to cover as well. So would love to get your thoughts on that perspective.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, you know, I've learned a lot, I think, as time has gone on. You know, early in my career, I can remember vividly my first management role. And I was very anxious about how I should show up. And I often sort of looked around to say, well, how did my manager behave? And what did that person look like? And should I emulate those behaviors? And how much of myself should I be bringing to work? And how do I want to show up? And do I seem smart enough? And I had all these kind of narratives running through my head early on and through portions of my career. And even as you change companies and you see different cultures, you start to think about, you know, do I have to sort of change the way I act or behave to fit into a particular culture? And I think, you know, I was very lucky in my career early on, where I was surrounded by some great leadership. And I think they all, you know, gave you a path to sort of be you. Always, of course, in the guardrails of doing the right thing and operating with integrity and all those things that I would do anyway. But I think I maybe gained confidence as time went on. I think earlier I was always a little more anxious to be super authentic. And as I gained experience, as I started to realize life's a lot easier if you just show up as you, it makes it easier to do your job every single day. And people see it, like they appreciate it. And it's one thing I look for, even when I bring new leaders into the organization, is to make sure that, you know, who they showed up as during their interview process is who they are when they get here. And I think it's giving people grace to make sure they can be that person and they can be authentic, because, I mean, we all know this, you're at your best when you're your own authentic self. So it's definitely been a journey for me to gain comfort in being myself and gaining confidence in being myself. And, you know, I'll never be the smartest person in the room. You know, I know that about a lot of things, and that's okay. Like, you know, I like to surround myself with people who are amazing at what they do. And just having confidence in that too, I think has been a journey for me to make sure that I am okay with the fact that, you know, there's always going to be somebody that knows a lot more than I do. And that's fine. You don't have to be the smartest person when you're the boss. And I think that was something I might've thought earlier in my career, that, you know, I had to be the smartest person, or I had to be the one that had all the answers, when in fact you realize you don't at all. You know, your job is not about answering all of everybody's questions and figuring everything out and being the smartest person. It's about really building an environment and hiring the right people that do that beautifully. And, you know, your job is to guide and lead and provide that North Star and an opportunity for people to really develop and grow. So it's been really fun. You know, I think it's sort of fun to learn about the way you do things early on and to look back every once in a while and to recognize, you know, the progress that each of us make individually.
You've mentioned all of the leaders and the other mentors mm-hmm. of yours who have played an integral part in your success and your growth, and that resonates on so many levels that I am always thankful for the people that have helped me as well through my journey. Tell us a little bit more about that role of mentorship as part of your current career, paying it forward. And maybe if you could drill a little bit deeper in the sense, what is maybe one advice or series of advice that you had received earlier on in your career that you continuously refer back to even these days and that you used to pass on to people that you mentor?
Yeah, I think I've been incredibly lucky to have people from the very beginning who were amazing mentors for me. And there's been lots of pieces of advice along the way that have been incredibly valuable. And I will say, I think the mentors can change over time. You know, so there's some that stick with you along the way as you continue in your journey. Some are in your life because of the company that you work for. And as you move on, perhaps those relationships don't stay the same. But they're all incredibly important at a particular point in time. And I've had mentors that have been peers. I've had mentors that have been bosses. I've had mentors that have been in other companies. I've had mentors that have been all shapes and sizes, I would say. And I think there's been lots of great pieces of advice that I've gotten. And the ones that are probably the best are the ones who are just deeply honest. And this is something I talk about a lot with mentorship is it's not great to have somebody who's always going to tell you like, great job, or, you know, that was really good. And, you know, I think that you do your best all the time. Like that's nice. And sometimes you want to hear that for sure. But it's the ones who kind of push on you to say, why are you doing it that way? Or what is, I had a mentor once say, you know, what are you afraid of? Like, why do you have these incredible conversations, you know, in a small group? And then as the group gets bigger, your voice starts to, we don't hear you. Like, what is it? Like, what's holding you back? And I noticed this about you, and I think you're doing yourself a disservice. Like that has stuck with me forever because now I say that to people. So it's things like just little things. And I think that's the piece that people miss sometimes with mentorship relationships or even sponsorship relationships, which are even stronger. It's tiny little tidbits of people knowing you personally and recognizing things that can create a shift in the way that you do things that can be very material, even though it's small. And I think that's my advice I would give is don't look for these big silver bullets and, you know, game-changing ideas that a mentor is going to bring. It's not about that. It's really more about a mentor identifying things about you as a person and recognizing that, you know, maybe you're not in the place you should be. Maybe you're not in a company that's a cultural fit for you, or maybe you're in a role that you're doing great, but you're not challenging yourself anymore. And you need to push to start thinking about doing something differently. I think mentors are awesome at sort of identifying those points in time to say, hey, you have an opportunity now to do more, and you're not doing yourself any favors by excelling like crazy in that current job. Go mm-hmm. do something else. Go step into something that's really hard and learn something from it. So I think I have been, you know, I just can't say enough about it. I've been so lucky to have people along the way that have been so helpful to me. And I ask them to push on me and to really be, you know, constructive in their feedback so that I can continue to improve what I do every day.
To double click further on a point that you made around honesty and authenticity as part of just the overall how you operate in general, one example that really comes to mind is I was recently listening to a conversation with Emily Choi, the president of Coinbase, and she gave an example of how the founder of Slack, Stuart Butterfield, how he approaches the overall feedback and how he provides feedback to his organization, to his leadership. And one thing that really stood out is the overall concept of honesty, that horses smell fear, that, you know, at the end of the day, even if the feedback is not so positive, that it's so important to start directly with that, that here's some of the things that you did wrong, here's some of the areas that I want you to improve on, and here's a path how to get there. Curious to get your thoughts on just the overall feedback and how do you communicate with your peers or your, you know, folks in, within your organization. Share some thoughts around just providing feedback and how do you go in terms of efficiency of that?
Yeah, I'm super glad you asked that question because feedback is hard to give. And it's probably the single most important thing that we can do as leaders. I'm a direct person by nature. So sometimes I have to sort of pull myself back a little bit because I tend to just want to be super direct to say, hey, here's what I saw. Here's what I thought was amazing. Here's where I think there's areas of opportunity. I couch the feedback based on the person. So if you know the person well enough, you know how they receive feedback. So I had one person who works for me who has flat out said, I can't take any feedback right now. And that's awesome. Like, you know, so to know that there are periods of time where people can receive and hear the feedback, and there are periods of time when they can't. So that actually helped me say to people before I give feedback, I'll actually say, how do you feel about getting some feedback? Is this a good time to talk about some feedback I'd like to provide? And if they say, you know what, no, like I'm not in the headspace for it, cool. Like we'll revisit it when you are, or yeah, for sure. Like let's hear it now. And so I know for me, feedback has to be specific. So when people give generalizations in feedback, I find that super hard to action. And I'm an action biased person by nature. So I get frustrated when someone tells me something that I don't know what to do with. So I try to do that as well. So I first kind of ask the person if they're at a place where they're comfortable getting feedback. If yes, then I always do absolutely want to give both positive feedback as well as constructive feedback. And I always use examples. So sometimes I'll even find myself having sort of a general thought on someone who works with me, but I haven't yet kind of nailed it in terms of what the feedback is specifically. And then I'll wait. I'll actually wait until I see it in an example where I can come back to the person and say, here's an example of something that I think is an area of opportunity, you know, and here's why I think it's important for you to think about it. That's sort of how I think about feedback. And it's also how I really like to receive feedback.
Right, right. Absolutely. And the next area that I want to touch upon is I'm super excited about because it's space that I have been influenced by ever since my early childhood. I come from a very athletic family. From my father was a boxing coach. Well, he is a boxing coach during the Soviet Union. And my mom is a gymnast. So we basically grew up in the gym. So the role of sports and just overall athletics in terms of that influence on me as a person and my leadership style has had tremendous impact. And I understand that's also the case with you as well. Tell us a little bit more about, you know, the role of sports, how that influenced you as a professional and maybe your leadership style. Please share some of that.
Yeah. It's, you know, similar to you, it's like core of my being. You know, I think there's so much about sports that I adore and it's so much a part of how I think about work. I mean, it's just, you know, I often think like, you know, what I did competitively for, you know, however many years has sort of translated itself into the work environment for me. So I've always been a team sport person. So I think there's a tremendous power in team. And I think there's a lot about, you know, teams, when you think about positions people play. So I think about it in the context of, is a person in the right position? Is the team collectively working well together? Doesn't help if you have a bunch of superstars that can't kind of bring it together in a way that brings value. That is totally translate to the business world. And it's sort of, I'm a bit of an arranger in terms of how I think about people and where they should be and how they can create the greatest impact. And it's super important how the team comes together. So for me, I think about it even in the context of hiring. Like, it's super important that you have the superstar in terms of the capability, but the cultural aspect of that person is as important because if that doesn't work, the team is not going to gel. So I think a lot about how I place people in and what role they'll play on that team and how collectively they can together give feedback. And one of the things I'm working on as I'm 8 months in my new role is we worked really hard on our culture as a team, as a leadership team, as to how we're gonna actually operate together. And that to me is absolutely crucial because you see what happens when it works. When you nail that piece of it and the team aspect is working, you see it kind of permeate throughout the organization. And that's the beauty of it. So when you get it right, you know, I think it's like you can conquer anything. And, you know, I have a firm belief that, you know, teams together, you know, are 10 times the sum of their parts when they're executing at greatness. And I also, you know, I'm a competitive person. So there's no doubt that that absolutely has a component in my thinking and always being able to think about, you know, what could we do differently or better? And back even to the feedback point, when you grow up in sports, you get immediate feedback and it's right. always example based. So like, you know, coaches, as you brought, you know, they'll time out in motion and just say, okay, in practice, like, stop. Here's what just happened. Here's how we can address that differently. So I think part of that has also played in the way that I think about giving feedback to people going forward. So as you can tell, I'm super passionate about it. I love every part of it. And I think that's sort of, you know, how I've continued it forward in my life has really shown up at work.
Yeah, that resonates on so many levels, and we could probably spend the rest of the podcast talking about just that specific area. But just moving on, you've mentioned culture and just building. One of my favorite books is Experimentation Matters. It's by my HBS professor, Stephen Tomke, and he talks a lot about just strategies to build and foster that culture of innovation. In terms of just your overall approach towards that, and it's not a sprint, it's a marathon, it's an ongoing initiative that you have to continuously work on. Obviously, Microsoft has a brand of just very innovative company, and for you to continuously foster that, share some thoughts from that perspective. What are the different strategies that really help you succeed from that perspective?
Yeah, I think the first to me and the most important is to create safe spaces. So people can't be innovative when they're nervous or they have fear. So we spend a lot of time thinking about how do we create a safe space that allows people to be innovative. And innovation is not just about products. Innovation can be anything. So I think that's one thing that we talk about a lot too, is don't think about it just in the context of you're innovating a particular product. You could be innovating a go-to-market strategy. You could be innovating a business process. You could be innovating all sorts of things. So part of it is expanding people's scope of mind to let them know that innovation can happen anywhere and anytime, creating a safe space that people know that they can try stuff, you know, that it's not all going to work, and that we reward and encourage failure. You know, you're going to get it wrong sometimes, and that's okay, but you took a step, and taking that step forward and being brave, you know, it's one of our kind of our pillars, is really an important part of how you create innovation. So for me, it starts right at the root of creating space and energy and allowing for it to happen. And then of course we have all sorts of opportunities and teams and areas where people can do what they're passionate about. And they can find those things internally at Microsoft all the time. They can find them externally with customers even, which is very cool. We have innovation center. So, you know, it is core to kind of our culture at Microsoft, but I do think the key to anything related to innovation has to be creating safe spaces so that people feel like they have the opportunity to go open their minds and do things that perhaps they hadn't thought about in the past.
Going back to the analogy of sports, and for you as a head coach of your current team, attracting and surrounding yourself with the top performers, top athletes, I would imagine that's at the top of your mind, probably 24/7, whether you're actively recruiting or not. Share a glimpse into perhaps an interview with you. What are the types of questions that you like to ask? And more importantly, what do you look for in the responses when you talk to candidates?
Yeah, that's a good question. So, I'm obsessive over talent. So I think this is one thing I'm thinking about constantly. It's the most important thing. Nothing is more important than people, period. So I think we spend a ton of time thinking about it, or I do, in terms of our people. So for me, you know, I think first, a lot of homework before I even talk to somebody. So for everybody out there listening, you know that everybody's perusing your profiles. You know, people are checking up on you. We're fairly connected industry, so it's pretty easy to get feedback on people. I do all that first. Like, I don't even talk to a person before I get feedback from those around them or the market to get perspective on the individual. And that helps me start to frame in my mind the cultural piece that I was mentioning. You know, is it someone that I believe can be a cultural fit? I look for people to be specific, and I look for people to be direct. So when people start to talk in sort of grand terms, you know, a lot of times buzzwords are a big deal in this industry. That actually drives me crazy. So I want people to get really specific with me in terms of what what is important to them. So part of the interview process is not just me interviewing them. It should be them interviewing me as well. So part of it is, will they be a fit here? And that is a huge part. Like, that's an automatic yes or no, like you're in or you're out if you can be a fit and fit into the culture that we're trying to build. And that's kind of the key. You won't even get to the interview, frankly, if you're not qualified. So I think that part for me is sort of like a check. Like, we know they're qualified. Then it's a question of what are they going to bring to the organization. So I'll ask real specific questions about what people do in scenarios or situations to get a flavor for how they react. I'll ask people to give me a perspective of what was your favorite job ever? Why? Like, things that just are, give me glimpses into their personality as well as their capability. And I like to make sure that they talk to a lot of people. So when you interview with Microsoft, you interview with a lot of people, and there's a really important reason for that. And that's to get different perspectives and to figure out whether the person is a fit as we think about the culture aspects of what we're trying to do and the business we're trying to drive. You know, are they bringing the capability, the expertise, the energy, the excitement? It doesn't have to be big energy, by the way. You can have quiet energy, but I look for that. I want people to be passionate about what they do. That goes a long, long way. And I also love people who, you can be a realist for sure, but, you know, are they optimistic about the potential of what they can do and what they think the business can do? So those are the types of things that I care a lot about. I'm also gritty. So I love grit. I love people that, you know, I know have worked hard. I love looking for previous athletes. I think there's a lot there in terms of dedication, rigor, management of time, things like that, that are also really important.
Well, there you go. If you are a candidate who is preparing for an interview with Deb, you have an insider look into what to expect in terms of the interview and how basically you approach from that perspective. But kind of all jokes aside, I think it's the importance of providing the candidate the opportunity to also ask the right questions as well and make their own assessments in terms of, is this the right fit from the culture perspective or from the leadership standpoint? That resonates on so many levels. So appreciate you sharing that. The other area that I'm also, I know you're very passionate about, is around tech diversification and attracting more women into the industry. And it's a passion of mine as well, because my 8-year-old boy, he's passionate about computers, technology, just like myself. And now my 4-year-old daughter is following his footsteps and just getting so curious about all of that. And it just, you know, it's heartwarming to see that type of relationship, that progression. But at the same time, just overall from the state of the industry perspective, I can definitely see a lot of opportunities for growth, for improvement from that standpoint. Share your Absolutely. Thoughts with us on that.
Yeah. And, you know, we know this, the data proves that, you know, young girls are often sort of led out of things like engineering, you know, they're led out of the sciences. So starting very early, you know, thank you, by the way, you know, we want young girls to feel like there's excitement and passion in those types of industries. And we want that to continue. So we do a lot of work at Microsoft around, you know, how can we support girls who code and things like that, that just get people excited about the potential. Part of the reason I love to do these things is because I think it's really important for women to see that other women are loving and enjoying the tech space. And you don't have to be a deep technical expert to do it. Also, there are a million different roles in these businesses that are really important and powerful. And I want people to realize that regardless of your background, there can be great fits in technology companies that don't have to be an engineer. Of course, if you are, that's awesome, you know, but you don't have to be. So I think it's about creating space. It's about letting people see the potential. A lot of times they'll say, you know, if you can't see someone doing the job, it's hard for you to understand how to get there. So we want to try to create as many open dialogues as we can. And I think we have an accountability, frankly, personally, to be reaching out and helping women in some cases right now, currently, actually come back to work in technology, because all of us lost a lot of women through the pandemic, just given the pressures. We saw a very significant exit of women in the workplace. So we're thinking about that a lot too. So I think there's a personal accountability. We have to use our own networks. We have to figure out how to be vocal about it and get the conversations out there. And then we got to create flexibility. So one of the things that's really important, I think, for women, but I think for everyone, especially after we've gone through the pandemic, is creating flexible work environments. And that's something for us at Microsoft, we think a lot about. How do you make sure you're creating space for people to do the work they can do in their best way? We'll be hybrid forever at Microsoft. So, you know, there'll be people working in office, there'll be people working virtually. hours can be flexible. So I think it's those types of things. Like, employees are going to require that. I think that's a good thing. You know, let's give people the space to do it when it's good for them. And that will bring more people back. I firmly believe that. So it has to be intentional. So hoping for it isn't helpful. Requiring it in terms of the expectation around interview slates, the expectation around what percentage representation you have, like, that's deeply important to us. I think it has to be for everybody. Otherwise, you won't make the progress you want. You have to measure it in order to get there. And I think that's an important part of what we have to do.
Yeah, that's very powerful. And for you as a leader of a global technology leader, I'm always fascinated by the overall concept of information diet or content diet. And what are the very successful professionals or entrepreneurs, how do they go about curating that specific diet? Because it is a diet at the end of the day. What do you let your mind be exposed to in terms of with so much information overload out there? Share your thoughts on that. How do you approach just overall your content diet? And what are some of the sources for you for learning?
Yeah, it's such a good question because it is overload. Like, there's so much content even in your day, you know, in terms of what you're absorbing or trying to absorb. Right. So I think that's a really good question. One of my biggest sources of learning are actually our customers. I get so much knowledge from having dialogues with our customers every single day. And that's sort of, you can read books and that's great. And I do. You can listen to podcasts and that's great. And I do too. And Pivot's one of my favorites. I like that a lot. But I also want to understand sort of the guts of what actually goes on day to day. So I find that when I have a conversation with a customer, I'm getting to the real deal around the experience that people have every single day in their life and their work and how they're reacting to it and what are they doing differently. So almost every conversation I have, even though a lot of it, of course, is around Microsoft and the technology we provide and the opportunities we provide to help them reach their business goals, I also kind of want to always understand. You know, I talked to a customer the other day who's going through a pretty significant reorganization. And we talked for 20 minutes just about that. Like, what does it feel like? How are you managing it? How are you managing the customer experience based on that? How are you managing your employee retention? What approaches are you taking? So those things feel so real to me, like that I can actually use it. It's something I'm absorbing and saying, like, that's something I can apply day to day. I learned from my, you know, I've talked about this concept of a board of directors, and I give Shelley Branson credit because she's the first person, she works at Microsoft, who kind of put that term in my head. But that's the people you sort of surround yourself with that are just amazing at their lives every single day. So I also have a lot of content coming in from there. And then I would say you got to give yourself space to clear your mind. So there's so much coming in that I also just like to, like, reading for me is actually more of a pleasure thing. I would say content for business is, I think, more podcast and people. Reading is more pleasure for me. And that's kind of where, you know, I'll read at night before I go to bed, or I was on vacation last week and I've read a ton. And, you know, I like books like that are detective novels or just, you know, fiction, fun, easy, clear the brain, enjoy some time. That's sort of how I do it. So for me, it's a combination of a lot of different things from a content diet perspective.
Well, that's a perfect segue to the next question I have in terms of books. So is there a book that you always recommend to others, and why is that?
Yeah, you know what? I don't. Like, this always drives people crazy, but I am not a favorites person. Like, I don't have a favorite book or a favorite anything. I tend to sort of think about it in the context of the moment. Yeah. I would say Dare to Lead by Brené Brown. Like, everybody should read Dare to Lead. Like, especially now. Like, it's just so, back to the fear comment that I made earlier around innovation. Yeah. It's an easy book to absorb. It's so, you can apply everything. Again, I'm big on sort of how can I apply things. I think she's awesome. And, you know, we at Microsoft did a lot of work with Dare to Lead last year with our teams. That's one that I think everybody could read and learn something from and benefit. But otherwise, it's sort of in the moment in terms of what people are experiencing and what they're trying to focus on.
For sure. I appreciate that. And just bringing back the conversation where it started, last but not least, who inspires Deb? Who do you consider your mentor, and why is that?
Yeah, I mean, for me, like, I'm just going to go to my parents. You know, my dad passed away about 11 years ago, but my mom and dad were workers. You know, they were hardworking people. My dad was a sales guy through and through his whole life. My mom was a nurse and she worked nights. So she'd be home during the day with us. And I have a brother and a sister. I'm the youngest of three. And, you know, you don't realize it in the moment. You don't. Like, as a kid, you're kind of like, oh, I guess this is just how everybody does things, you know, and, you know, two hardworking parents that always just nothing seemed like you couldn't get it. Like everything was about, hey, if you want to do it, go do it. Like if you put in the hard work, if you put in the time, anything is possible. So I think about that more now than ever, because I think there's so much realness in sort of how you get inspired and led by what your parents have done for you. I'm super grateful. So for me, I always think back to that. And I think about what my parents were actually managing at the time, which you don't realize when you're a kid. And it was a big deal. You know, you're managing careers and paying bills and, you know, these crazy schedules so that you can be there for your kids' games and things like that. I mean, that to me is probably the biggest inspiration and impact on my life, frankly.
Deb, I can't thank you enough for this very short and insightful conversation. I personally learned quite a bit. And what I love doing with all the guests on Ivy Podcast is do a follow-up recording in about a year where we revisit the conversation from a year ago and see if everything we've discussed still makes sense, still applies. So I'm definitely looking forward to doing that with you as well.
I love that. That sounds awesome. And I so appreciate you having me. It's been really fun to talk with you.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.